Welcome. You are listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, and this is Rabbi Elliot Cosgrove. While it's always better to hear it live, this is a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. Enjoy our latest installment. Shabbat Shalom. A film wrote, this director, screenwriter, and film critic, Jean-Luc Godard, should have a beginning, a middle, and an end, but not necessarily in that order. What he meant, as evidenced by his own films, if you're familiar with them, is that when it comes to the sequencing of a story in a movie, or for that matter, a book or a sermon or any narrative telling, one need not necessarily follow a straight line. Whenever we tell a story, we always make choices about the ordering of the facts, and doing so in a linear way is just one of many possibilities. Were you to ask me how I became your rabbi, I could relate it, if I wanted, chronologically, from Jewish day school to rabbinical school to graduate school to Chicago to the Upper East Side, but I could also tell the story another way. Beginning with a formative experience in college, the seeds of which were planted in my childhood, which when combined with the retrieved memory of a grandfather I never knew, would ultimately inform a decision point following the birth of my fourth child. Which version is true? The first or the second? The linear or the non-linear? The chronological or the non-chronological? The short answer, of course, is both. Most tales are not told purely chronologically. In fact, one could argue that the good ones, the really good ones, are told a little bit out of order, because it's in that out of ordering that the real interesting truths can be found. So let's jump cut, if you will, not just to the very best story of them all, the Torah, but to a famed debate between two of the most renowned Torah scholars of our people, the 11th century French commentator, Rabbi Shlomo Yitzchaki, better known by the acronym Rashi, and the 13th century Spanish commentator, Rabbi Moses ben Nachman, better known as Ramban, often referred to as Nachmanides. Of their many debates, perhaps the most famous is on the issue of whether the Torah is or is not laid out in chronological sequence, an extended argument over the Talmudic dictum, Ein Mukdam U'Meuchar BaTorah. Literally, there is no late or early in the Torah. Rashi, for his part, holds that when Moses finally got down to writing the Torah at the end of the wilderness wandering, the story was not laid out chronologically, but rather topically or thematically. For example, last month, we read of the story of the manna from heaven, and how it was stored in the Mishkan, in the tabernacle, a detail that becomes problematic upon the realization that the tabernacle had yet to be built. Unless, of course, one holds, as Rashi does, Ein Mukdam U'Meuchar BaTorah, in which case it was a detail that was relayed sensibly, though a bit early, because the topic of that parsha was the manna. Another classic example is the story of Judah and Tamar in Genesis chapter 38, which is wedged anachronistically into the middle of the Joseph story. Or just 2 weeks ago, the question of whether the Ten Commandments were given before or after the arrival of Jethro, Moses' father-in-law. In each of these examples, amongst many others, Rashi resolves the seeming anachronism by saying, Ein mukdam u'meuchar batorah. Chronology is not king. The narrative of the Torah is not laid out like a timeline, and what appears to be a problem or contradiction or anachronism is anything but. Our Spanish friend Ramban holds otherwise. He says that the Torah, in almost every instance, does follow chronological order. Despite his mystical inclinations, Ramban has no patience for the postmodern Quentin Tarantino pulp fiction imaginings of Rashi. The Torah is the Torah, and God is the author, which means the burden of proof is on us. If there's a detail that seems odd, out of place, or out of time, then the problem isn't the problem, be it the manna, Judah, and Tamar, or this week's Torah reading. The literary sequencing of the text and the chronological sequencing of the text is one and the same and exactly as it should be. So, as they say on the news, let's get after it. This morning, we read the instructions being given by God to Israel to build a Mishkan, the aforementioned desert tabernacle that would house God's presence and the tablets of the law that had just been given at Mount Sinai. This morning's Torah reading, as Katie described beautifully, is an architectural digest of sorts. This week and next week's Torah reading, describing the specifications, the materials, and the dimensions of the Mishkan, not to mention the garments to be worn by the anticipated priests who would attend to the sacred precincts of ancient Israel. 2 weeks from now, and I'll return to this point shortly, we'll read of the bottom dropping out as the children of Israel, believing themselves to be abandoned by Moses on the mountain, build for themselves a golden calf. Then, having been punished for their idolatry, the final two readings of Exodus, Vayakhel Pekudei, revisit the subject matter of this week and next week, at which time the actual construction of the Mishkan takes place and is brought to completion. The giving of the law at Mount Sinai, followed by the instructions on how to build the Mishkan, followed by the idolatry of the golden calf, followed by the actual building of the Mishkan. I've missed out a few parts, but that's basically how the final 15 chapters of Exodus unfold. For Ramban, the sequencing of the story makes perfect sense. The children of Israel have just received the law, they've experienced the glory of God's presence at Mount Sinai, and now is the time to move forward from the base of the mountain and continue on their journey. It makes all the sense in the world that their first commandment would be to move, as they move forward from the mountain, is the building of the Mishkan, the mobile sanctuary that could house not only God's presence, but the tablets that they just received. One cannot stay at Sinai forever. We need a sacred mobile structure to accompany us on our journey. And for Israel, that structure, that Winnebago of the Spirit, was the Mishkan. Rashi sees it differently and invokes his beloved principle, Ein Mukdam U'Meuchar BaTorah. There is no chronological order in the Torah. Although Rashi offers a variety of reasons why a reconsideration of the sequencing of the text is in order, at its core, his argument is that the building of the Mishkan must have been in response to the sin of the golden calf. Sinful as it was for Israel to build a false god, it was a sin that was prompted by the very human need of the Israelites to direct their spiritual energies and experiences in that fashion. The Israelites were, after all, a newly emancipated people. And maybe, just maybe, as the divine wrath subsided, God realized that while you can take an Israelite out of the land of idol worship, it's actually much more difficult to take the idol worship out of the Israelite. By this telling, the Mishkan was an accommodation by God to humanity, a bit like keeping kosher is God's way of saying, in a perfect world, maybe, we would all be vegetarians. But by keeping kosher, you can still eat meat with certain limitations. The building of the Mishkan was a sort of divinely sanctioned meet you where you are moment, an acknowledgement that this ragtag desert tribe had a psychological need for communal, ritual, and theological structures to organize themselves. The fact that the dedication of the Mishkan would demand a sin offering as a communal atonement all but makes the implicit explicit. It was not willy-nilly, Rashi argues, that the building of the Mishkan follows the sin of the golden calf. Its placement has to be there. That's the very point of the Mishkan, a response to the golden calf. The argument between Rashi and Ramban is an interesting one, and there are more points to be made for either side. At stake, of course, is not just two different literary approaches, but two different takes on the narrative arc of a journey of the Israelites, and by extension, our own journeys. Rashi and Ramban were in agreement that the Israelites were in need of a place where God could dwell. But for Ramban, it reflected the sentiment that we all know from our own lives, namely that Sinai moments are not sustainable. No one stays at the mountain forever. The goals of a religious life is to live spiritually attuned to God's ongoing and steady presence every step of life's journeys. Rashi's focus, on the other hand, is a need for God's presence to be felt even at the moments, maybe especially at the moments when we fail and fall and stumble. We need that tabernacle. We need God's sheltering presence at those times when we are least deserving, when we ourselves sense that the divine spark within each of us is most elusive. No house of worship, not in the Bible, nor the one in which you're sitting in today, is intended for saints. If nothing else, a sanctuary must be a spiritual refuge, a halfway house for the spiritually broken, for those seeking tikkun, in Hebrew meaning to mend and to be made whole again. We in this room know our shortcomings better than anyone, so we come here to be reminded of the person whom we seek to be and to be inspired and aspire towards the higher rung and pray for the needed boost to bring it within reach. Ultimately, I'm not sure where I fall in the debate. Both Rashi and Ramban have a point, both about the text and the human condition, which I guess is why we're still quoting them hundreds of years later. But what I will add, and what I was struck by, is that maybe the most interesting aspect of these entire chapters is not the question of whether the instructions to build the Mishkan arrived after Mount Sinai or after the golden calf. The most remarkable part of this whole story is that the Israelites built the tabernacle at all. You see, it's one thing for a community or a person to receive a set of instructions, be it commandments or the design and specifications of the Mishkan. It's certainly no small thing for a person or a people to be liberated by the mighty hand of God and find the courage to dream dreams and imagine unseen futures. But to actually take those instructions, to take those freedoms and dreams, and then to actually build something and to see it to completion, that's really something. And to do so, having been through the grind of servitude, having been laid low as Israel was, and to muster the spiritual resilience to dust oneself off, pick oneself up, find one's stride, and build a structure capable of housing God's presence, well, that's downright heroic. Ramban calls the book of Exodus the book of redemption, a title I believe is not just about God's redemption of Israel at the sea. Exodus is a book about redemption because it tells the story of a people who, against the odds, having experienced the dark night of the soul, emerge from that night, that crucible, and without self-pity, find the spiritual wherewithal to build. May the story of Exodus inspire our generation anew. May our stories follow the same redemptive arc, and may each one of us prove ourselves capable of building those structures worthy of housing God's presence. Shabbat Shalom. Thank you for listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. See you in shul. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.